As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute, and I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Lads and Powers. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on-demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Hello, I'm Scott Powers, and I'm with Mark Lazarus. Mark, hello.
I have a proposal. I think that for just this week only, we should turn this into a Mets podcast. I just said broadcast like you did on the three takes that we screwed up at the beginning. We turn this into nothing but Mets. It doesn't exist. It's been erased. We just talk about Max Scherzer and Starling Marte and all the false hope I have that's going to be just destroyed by August of next year.
What's going on with Starling Castro? Or not Starling Castro, with Baez.
The Mets are, Uncle Steve's got all the money in the world. He's already spent like $250 million in the last 72 hours. And apparently they're still very much in on Baez. I'm here for it. The Mets played like a small market team for decades under the Wilpons. So give me all the stars. I want to be the assholes of the league for once. I want to be the Yankees or the Dodgers that everybody hates for just buying a championship. That's my goal.
Yeah, yeah. As a Cubs fan, it's all bad over here. So, they're going to spend. Yeah, I don't know what they're
going to. They're in on Baez too. He likes Chicago.
Yeah, they could have just paid him and kept him. And I don't.
Would have made
Doesn't
more
make
sense.
Any sense, yeah. So the Blackhawks, another team that, I don't know how much similarity there is, but there's not really a great transition. You were on the road trip, so-so road trip. They come home and played well against the Blues, especially for two periods, come back. Yesterday, Derek King says it's their best game of the season. Again, it's lack of offense and... Yeah, I feel like that's. I guess when we entered the season, like it didn't feel like this team was going to lack offense, and that's exactly, defensively they've been better. Like some of the metrics are better, and I feel like some of the players have improved as the season's gone along. But it's a team that, even just giving up just two or one goal, like it's still a question mark whether they're going to produce enough to win a game.
Well, yeah, it's funny because, when we talked before the season, we were like, well, they'll score goals, but can they prevent goals? And, that they got Fleury, maybe they can prevent some goals, because they'll definitely score some. And we talked to scouts at the beginning of the year, oh, they're going to score some goals. And first month of the season, Jeremy Colleton pulled out the old Joel Quenneville chestnut of, I'm not worried about our offense. Our offense will be there. Derek King, not worried about scoring. Well, it's time to worry about scoring.
Yeah.
Now that the power play has completely dried up, it's just, there's nothing. There's just no goals. I mean, you got basically Alex DeBrincat, and that's pretty much it. Patrick Kane hasn't scored much in a while. Taves hasn't scored all season. Kubalik hasn't scored in, what, 15, 16 games now? It's just not coming from anywhere. Like, Jujhar Khaira has as many goals as any prominent players do over the past month.
Well, yeah, and it's basically DeBrincat and Hagel, and then...
And Hagel, right.
I think it was over the last 10 games. I pulled up the stat last night. It was DeBrincat, Hagel, and Kara and Seth Jones who combined for like 14 of their 18 goals or something. Like, it was the numbers are just like the staggering. Like, yeah, struggled,
they have 7 regulation goals in their last 5 games.
Yeah,
I mean, it's they're playing pretty well defensively. You look at their last, especially the last, what, 4 periods. I mean, they've locked it down. They've gone to this like hyper conservative, you know, that's what Derek King has really brought to them. Like, let's muck up the neutral zone, let's sag in the defensive zone. They're working a little harder. They're playing really strong defensively, which is not a thing we expected to say about these guys. But they can't score, which is also a thing we were not expecting to say about these guys.
I don't know if it improves either, you know? Like, I don't see it. Like, it you would think eventually the power play maybe gets going. And Kane mentioned Tyler Johnson being out, but I don't know how much Tyler Johnson.
Got it. Tyler Johnson's the missing piece, then you're in trouble. No offense to Tyler Johnson.
And
I mean, you'd think, just mathematically speaking,
for sure, yeah,
there's going to be some regression to the mean. Jonathan Taves is going to score a hockey goal again. He scored the other night against St. Louis, and then, or the other day, and then it was taken away by an offside. Dominic Kubalik is going to catch fire again, and when he scores, he usually scores in bunches. Patrick Kane is going to score goals again. But, you know, when? Is it going to be like in January when the season's like really too late? I mean, it's already pretty much too late. There's 61 games left in the season. They got to make some moves now. They have to win games now. They really need to win games like that San Jose, a winnable game that they played well in and had more chances and had more opportunities, and they didn't score. They didn't win. And it's not like they really got goalied in that game either. They're just not burying anything. So they need to put a hot streak together if they want to have any hope. Like, look, I know that everyone is going to laugh at me for even suggesting the idea of making the playoffs, but in that room, they think they have enough time. They believe they have enough time to make a run and make the playoffs. And stranger things have happened than a team going on like an 8-game win streak, especially with the goaltending the Blackhawks have. But they have to score. You can't win every game 1-0. You can't win every game 2-1. They have to eventually be able to score 3, 4, 5 goals in a game. And right now, this does not look like a team that's capable of that.
Yeah, it feels like the window is here. Like, this is the month if you're going to, you know, like we've... American Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving is usually the key date, but you know, we've seen.
Do we have to say American Thanksgiving on this podcast? Is that just the Athletic Hockey Show pod where are Canadians listening to us? Can we just make fun of Canadian Thanksgiving here? Is that allowed?
I don't know.
I think I actually read somewhere that Canadian Thanksgiving is older than ours, so maybe I should just shut up.
but I mean, teams have defy that occasionally, and we've seen the Blackhawks be out of it in recent years and then battle back, and then it's, you know, one game here or there where they're, you know, within a few points, and then, you know, like the season's gone the wrong way. But I mean, you look at it now, they're in seventh in the Central with 16 points, and you know, Dallas hasn't been great, and in Nashville, and even Colorado obviously hasn't kind of lived up to expectations. Where you put together some wins, you're a lot closer than you think. And but it has to happen sooner than later, and I guess, as we wrote the piece today about roster projection, and, you know, I've seen people just getting so angry over the last few days. Like, I don't know what, like, something's boiled over. Like,
it's 10 times in the Blackhawks fan.
Yeah, like, it was, you know, like, it was fire Colt, and now it's like, well, Jonathan Taves is not a top 6 center, and Kubalik needs to sit, and, Taves, and, you know, I've seen a lot of Doc hate lately, and it's just, there's no one else in the system. Like, there's no one else to replace these guys, you know? Like, it's, one, that's it, and two, it's, I don't know. Just it feel like the other day, like, yeah, the other triggers for people was Boqvist. Like, I brought up Boqvist stats the other day, and people just went crazy. Or if I mentioned that Gustafsson's playing well, that seems to drive
people nuts too. He is playing well.
Yeah, I don't. There's certain triggers right now where I feel like the fan base is just really on edge. And certainly, you need Taves and Doc to produce, and they're not wrong there. It's just the idea that to sit Taves, or that he isn't a top 6 center when you look at everything else he brings to the table. And sure, you need him produce, and you need him to be good, but it's, I don't know, he's been gone for a year. Like, he's been other, you know, like the analytics are decent, and
I'll say this about Jonathan Taves. I mean, nobody expected him to be without a goal in 20 games
for sure, yeah,
but he has been A, better, B, far more durable see just an all-around presence that I wasn't expecting him to be. I didn't think there was any chance. I don't think he should have played 20 games. I think, frankly, he might benefit from a night off here and there. This is a hard season. It's a hard schedule. And he's coming off a year off with major health issues. Maybe it would be a little different if he got a night off here and there. But the fact that he's playing the kind of minutes he's playing, the heavy minutes, he's on the PK, he's on the power play. He's basically doing everything Jonathan Toews has always done, maybe just a couple fewer minutes because he's not the number one center. He's the number two center now. It's been remarkable and far more than I anticipated him doing this year.
And I guess that kind of circles the point that I was trying to get eventually, is that there isn't much like to replace these guys. Like Toews sitting right now would be, yeah, I think you'd see a massive drop off, you know, like, especially them moving on from Gaudette, and they obviously, I think some of it, you know, like we saw Colleton's decisions with lines and players. Either this is now being driven by Mark Crawford a little bit, or it's being driven organizationally where they love Reese Johnson, they love Hardman. You know, like it was an organization decision to put Gaudette on waivers. Like they wasn't like, let's try him in the top six, you know, let's put him with some really good offensive players. They're like, no, let's put him on waivers and, you know, maybe we get him through. You know, it's sitting Strome again. Like they, and doing that piece that again, I guess this other point was, you know, doing that piece today about the roster projection is that there isn't much coming that they, I think there's a, that they understand they need Morgstrom to be really good. They need some of these guys to really pan out because it's going to be difficult for them to rebuild again without, you know, the first round draft pick, but also what's in the, you know, within the prospect pipeline, at least especially forwards, that you need some of these guys to really to work. And I feel like they, you know, them giving Borgstrup an opportunity to play with Kubalik, or, you know, continuing to play Hardman or Reese Johnson, all these guys. Like, I think some of these are long-term decisions where, like, it would have made sense to sit down Toews for a game and give Gaudette an opportunity, or yep, give a Strome a chance there. And, yeah, I don't know. It feels like these are very forward-thinking decisions too, where they're not as much made about, you know, the current moment.
Well, I think the previous regime was not really forward thinking all that much anymore. You reach a certain point as a general manager where things are getting dire, where you start sacrificing the future for the present because you have to manage for your job, right? You have to start thinking about this year, because if we suck this year, it doesn't matter what I do in 3 years because I'm not going to be here anymore. And that's how GMs think. GMs that have long-term security think long-term. Stan Bowman did that for years. Early on, you know, he was sacrificed first round picks, but it was for certain reasons, and he wasn't worried about that because he was still going to be here. People think about their job status when they make these decisions, and I think that the abortion of the rebuild this summer, the abrupt just shift in tone, had something to do with the fact that there was pressure for them to win immediately. And this is what happens when you have a GM on the hot seat, when you have a coach on the hot seat, is you start worrying only about the now and not the future. And now you've got Kyle Davidson or whoever's in that seat in the long term in a really difficult position. I mean, you think about, what was it, 2017, 2018, they drafted nothing but defensemen in the first and second rounds, right? And two of them are gone, and two of them aren't really panning out. Ian Mitchell and Nicholas Beaudin right now, the organization's not really that high on them. They're like the number 8, 9, 10 guys. They're thinking more highly of guys that are the next wave, the Alex Vlasics, the Del Mastros, you know, the Wyatt Kaiser. Guys like that are what they're thinking of now. So you spent 2 years not building up your forward core and getting nothing out of it on the back end either. So now you have kind of, the cupboard's kind of bare on the defensive side, but it's really bare on the forward side because you haven't drafted any forwards.
Yeah.
So you got Kirby Dach, who fell into your lap. Don't imagine how bad things would be if they were picking 12th that year. And then you give up your first round pick this year so you don't get a Cole Sillinger type who's just tearing it up in Columbus already. And this is where you're at. And they're not going to have a number one draft pick next year because they're probably not going to win the lottery. They're not going to be the worst or the second worst team in the league. And even if they were, they'd have about a 50% chance of getting one of those top two picks. So they almost certainly don't have a number one draft pick next year. I mean, they're pretty good, well, and screwed when you look at this lineup, because Henrik Borgstrom doesn't look like that guy. He looks like a guy who's just on a fringe and he's got some talent there. He's got some size, but you could see why he ended up in Europe and didn't pan out in Florida. You could say that about all these. Strome, it's not happening. You know, there are things that I see in him and others see in him that the Blackhawks don't. But every opportunity he's gotten, and he has gotten opportunities under Derek King that he didn't get under Jeremy Colleton, he hasn't made the most of. Even when he's played well, he's not producing goals. He's not getting assists. He has to do that when you're on the fringe. So there's not a lot of hope right now. And I think you're seeing that reflected in the fan base. Good Lord, the comments to start off our piece today on the projections was just, could just be a general wailing and gnashing of teeth, because help is not on the way. It might get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. And the problem is that if Kubalik, like if he'd been continued to be a 20-30 goal scorer and maybe things turn around this season, but it's like that could have been a piece you build around, you know, like that. And I think that's the biggest problem too, is that like if Strom and Kubalik had stayed consistent and it showed you, you know, like if they could reach that the peak, you know, their potential that we've seen at times, and like then you have pieces to build around. But you're talking about Strom, who once was considered, you know, like a future top six center, and now he's probably out of the organization after the season. And Kubalik might be the same case too, where you know,
yeah, like the team's not that high on Kubalik. They really never have been. He just scored so many goals, and they're like, all right, we'll stick with them. But like they've never really been married to him as a player.
Yeah, and I think that's a struggle too, is that they found a few players that probably fit the mold. That at least it's worked for them, you know. Like Kubalik was a really good goal scorer, and now if Kubalik and Strom are going to pan out, and Nylander, you know, it certainly doesn't seem like he's going to, like, there's no reason why that, you know, Davidson has to be married to Nylander either. Like there are too many guys that you either traded for, you know, like you traded your first round pick, whoever you took for, or guys who just haven't panned out that you probably slotted in as projected pieces of the future. And you're left with not many. Like it's, you know, when I was looking through the prospects for our projection piece, it's like, well, there's Colton Dock who may or may not be, you know, like he's got some goal scoring ability, but he's not like he's tearing it up. Like he has a chance.
You also wonder if that was a pick that you know, whenever you pick someone's brother in the organization, sure, yeah. It's like, was that a good use of the pick, or are they doing a sentimental thing here?
Yeah. And it's interesting because they devoted so much to drafting the small, like there was a mindset that we need to draft small and skilled defensemen. That's the way the game's going. And then 3 years later, they decided the game's not going that way. And then they started drafting large defensemen, but also using early draft picks, you know, using a second rounder in Vlasic, a first rounder in Nolan Allen. Soon they're going to have like 20 guys in Rockford. Like you just look at, you know, you already have Galvis and Phillips and Bodan and Mitchell there. And then, you know, Vlasic's going to sign and Kaiser probably signs, and Del Mastro and Nolan Allen are both have to be there within 2 years because they're both in the CHL. So like it just, and there's only so many of those guys that have offensive potential. Like it's nice to have those defensemen, but you need guys who can, you know, push the pace. And I think you've seen that a little bit this year too, where the Blackhawks have struggled. And I think you've seen it with McCabe and Murphy, who've struggled to get out of their own defensive zone at times, or they're just not getting the puck off the ice, or, you know, I think, and this other thing is that, you know, I tweeted about Boqvist the other day. People are like, oh, you can't just compare this, you know, him against Jones. And it's not fair because Jones is the number one defenseman, but the trade is so much bigger than that. And this is nothing against Jones, because I think he's been okay. He's probably, you know, he's probably not worth his cap, especially next season. But it is the fact that it's Sillinger and it's Boqvist who could, you know, use correctly. Just wait the way Gustafson used correctly. They're good offensive defensemen. And then it's just the draft pick next year. Like, If Bowman had been fired and not made that Jones trade, Kyle Davidson would be in a pretty good spot, you know? Like, you could maybe have got Seth Jones in a different way, but it puts them so far behind the eight ball of what they can do if this is, you know, a lost season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, yeah, I mean, for years, we talked about the lack of real prospects and the shallowness of the prospect pool, almost like a joke, because they were on top of the league and who cared? And they were trading their number one draft pick every year for, you know, to get Antoine Vermette, to get Andrew Ladd, to get all these guys. And it didn't matter because you were winning. But now we're 5 years out from, or 6 years out almost from the last time they were relevant, that they were in that position. And it hasn't really gotten any better. I mean, there's not a lot that they're very high on Lucas Reichel. We don't know what his injury situation is. We'll find out more about that tomorrow. But that's basically it. He's the only real game potential, I should say, game breaker that they have in the entire system. On the front end or the back end, there's no Kale McCarr coming. There's no Nathan MacKinnon coming. There's no savior that's going to come and completely revitalize this organization. No one of that level, unless they somehow fall into the number one or the number two draft pick next year. And that's, again, the odds are against them.
Yeah. Part of it is they don't have a lot of goal scorers in the pool either. You know, like they've drafted guys for a while, and I feel like, you know, you'd have some prospects that came through and, you know, guys that would click and, you know, whether third or fourth rounders, and even like guys like Tyler Mott and Hayden, you know, like they're not world beaters, but they're NHL players. You know, and you know, they're going to have 100 plus games, and got like they've missed now on like Jake Wise and Nordgren, and some of that's, you know, like it's not the Blackhawks doing, they got into injuries, but there's a lot of guys like that as of late where, you know, like there's a number of draft classes, you know, Graham Knotts, you know, when you didn't have a first round pick that year, but for not to pan out, like that just, it really hurts your talent pool, and not to hit on a third round pick like Wise or Nordgren. You know, whether it's out of your control or not, it really depletes what you can do, and even have guys come in and be role players or have a certain role. And there's not, even in Rockford now, like they're Altie Barmakian and Barrett and Josiah Slavin, they're all, yeah, they're all
bottom six guys. They're potential bottom NHLs six.
That, yeah, they need, and like Hagel's a fine for them, you know, for like, if they can find players like that, who they can, you know, either sign as overagers in Canada or sign more international players. I mean, those are harder to come by, but
college players. I mean, that's their only route, because
yeah, the college players are just, it's so rare. Like they've obviously hit with Suter and.
Are you implying that Drew LeBlanc and Matt Carey are not the game changers we were led to believe they would be? I look, they and let's not forget that, you know, 2 years from now, they're likely to have Patrick Kane at some kind of $10 million salary, Seth Jones at $9.5 million, Alex DeBrincat is probably going to be $9 to $10 million right now. So you're going to have three guys at that level, and it's been, you know, we've still yet to see a team in the NHL really do it with that kind of cap load. I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning had some cap maneuverings going on with the LTIR, and they have lower salary guys because there's no taxes there. You know, look at the Maple Leafs. They've got like 75 guys making $11 million, and they haven't gotten out of the first round. So not only are the Blackhawks going to be short on talent, they're going to be very heavy at the top in terms of salary, which leaves them desperately clinging to entry-level contracts, which comes from rookies, Europeans, college guys. They're going to need guys like Dominic Kubalik coming in, scoring 30 goals on a $925,000 contract. That's the only way to succeed when you have so much money tied up in just a few guys, because the cap, if it goes up, it's going to go up maybe $1 million by then. So they're going to be really, really, really up against the cap and not well positioned. It's a scary place to be.
Yeah, doing that piece today really kind of brought that home about even having some money next offseason. Like, where do you go spend it? Like, you usually overpay and you know, UFAs and stuff. So, like, I think that's a challenge too. Is not just to spend money to spend it, because you need to bring in the right players. And you know, even when I was walking around the United Center last night, my other thought was that, like, it makes sense in some ways to step away from Kane and Toews for, you know, like an assortment of reasons. Part of it's like you may just need to go through another rebuild, but part of this there has to be a business aspect to this, right? Like, every jersey is still Kane and Toews, you know? Like, you see everything. Like, there's still Hosses out there, and I see some Bobby Halls. Like, but it's still Kane and Toews wherever you walk. And it's not like DeBrincat, you know? Like, DeBrincat's been a really nice player, but there hasn't been – I think winning brings such a markability, too, you know? Like, there's such a successful – you know, like Sharps and Jarmelsons and, you know, Keats and Seabrooks. Like, there's just – you know, being a part of a winner, I think, helps makes you more marketable and sell jerseys like that. But without a Kane and Toews, like, the organization just changes completely from a business aspect, and just who's plastered everywhere in that building. And so I wonder how much that's going to come into play. Like, if you know the team, like, it's going to be a bit longer, and certainly you need those guys to agree to another contract, and some of it may have to be financially driven, but like, they are such a large pass the portion of what they do business wise, and why people still come into that building.
Yeah. And I did that story last week on what all the possibilities with Toews and Kane, and, you know, everything changed, obviously, with the Kyle Beach thing. I think, you know, people get mad at us for bringing this up a lot, but it's very much on the front of everyone's mind in the organization. Some fans might have already moved on. I assure you the team is not. It's very important to them. And there is this inclination to kind of purge itself of anyone that was affiliated with that 2010 team. Now, that's not going to happen completely because there are still people that, you know, the equipment staff and the, you know, people that work on the periphery of things and people in the front office still. So that's not going to happen completely, but Taves and Kane are obviously very public figures in that regard. So that plays into it. But I agree with you. I think they have a hard time moving on from both of them at the same time. I think that's unlikely. You know, I talked to a few people about Kane and they all said the same thing. Like it matters. Kane's a legacy guy. It matters to him, his legacy. And he wants to be one of those, you know, played for the same team as Holger, broke every record the Blackhawks had. He wants to have his name at the top of the record book. He wants to pass Makita and Hull and all that stuff. That matters. And that's good. That's not a knock on him. You want someone who doesn't want to become some kind of cup mercenary. That's the luxury the Blackhawks have had in that Kane and Taves have had. They won early in their careers and they won a few times. So there's less urgency to go chase a cup somewhere else. This isn't a Ray Bourque situation. They might want to just stay forever because they love Chicago and they love the Blackhawks. And that's great. That's wonderful. That's what you want out of your pro athletes if you're a fan. But it does hamstring what they're able to do. And, you know, well, let's get into, we have a couple of questions here. And we had one from David Tuckman who emailed us at lazenpowers@gmail.com. And this is relevant. He said, is it realistic to assume that next season may be Jonathan Taves' last ever in the NHL? I think it's pretty clear that last season with COVID, it changed him, and it seems that this is something he has seriously considered. Also, considering that the Blackhawks look likely to restart the building process, does he want to be a part of that? Now, there's a lot of qualifiers in that question. Realistic to assume maybe Taves' last. I think it's fair to wonder if Jonathan Taves just says, you know what, I've done everything you could do in this league. I've had a great career. I'm 35. He'll be 35 when this contract runs up. It's possible that he might step away from the game. I don't expect him to, though. I mean, this is a guy who lives and breathes hockey and has for a long time. I know that the year off changed him in a lot of ways, some for better, some maybe not for better, in just the way he perceives hockey and everything like that. But you could see how pissed he is these last couple of weeks because the not scoring is weighing on him. This early on, I kind of thought, like, wow, this is a guy whose perspective has changed. He's not sweating the small stuff anymore. He realizes how fortunate he is to be in the NHL. And I think all of that is still true and positive, but it's weighing on him now. The old Jonathan Taves is starting to creep back in there where he's like, you know, probably taking this home with him and growling a lot.
Well, it's 21
mirror.
Games, you know? I think it would get it, to anyone at this
right.
point, you know?
Like, and so he still has that fire in him. And I think that's starting to come out a little more and more often. I don't think this is a guy who wants to retire on a down note either. I think he feels he has something to prove to go up there and show that he can still be a good player in the NHL. Might he retire at the end of next season? Sure. Absolutely. Distinct possibility. Do I expect it to happen? No, I don't think it does.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that's I think his own play is going to dictate some of it too. You know, like if he's playing well and everything's going right, then you want to stick around. If you're not, I think that it's going to make it a lot harder because I think he's also realistic about it too. Like he'll play until he can, but this is the type of season, especially if it kind of, you know, like he will score some goals, but if it's not a fun season, if they're not winning and I don't know how much he can, you know, like how much do you want to do that anymore? Like right. that just, it's not,
but you can leave Chicago and not retire. I think that's the possibility that have been opened up by the way the last couple of years have played out is I could see both Kane and Taves. I know I just said that Kane wouldn't, but he could say that, you know what, fresh start somewhere else. Let me see what I can do. My hometown, Winnipeg, Buffalo, something like that.
Yeah, and maybe there's less. Maybe there's like being Jonathan Taves in Chicago. There's a lot of responsibility, you know. Like there's a lot of people looking at you for certain things, and maybe he doesn't want that anymore either. Like it had to be harder to still, you know, when he was asked before the season, like you're coming in, you know, missing a year, and you're expected to be a leader of a team that you don't really know,
right?
You know? Like there's some challenges in that too. So I wonder if you know if that could play into it.
Well, we used to talk about Marian Hossa before we knew about the skin condition. We'd be like, oh, man, when he's like 39, 40 years old, he's going to be the greatest third-line winger in the history of third-line wingers. Just bum-slaying and just killing guys. It's going to be awesome. I can still see that with Jonathan Taves. If Jonathan Taves ever becomes, you know what, I accept the fact that this is what I am now, And when I'm 35, 36 years old, I just want to be a third line checking center. I'm not going to worry about the points. I'm just going to just defend my ass off, kill penalties. I mean, what an asset a guy like that could be to a contending team, like a team like Vegas or Colorado that might still be trying to get over the hump. If you could just slot him in the third line center, playing 15 hard minutes a night and on the PK, and he chips in with depth scoring, I mean, that he'd be a monster in that role, should he choose to accept it.
Yeah. What else? I don't have the questions up here. Do you have
them? Yeah, I got one. Hockey Life asks, ignoring the PR nightmare, could it make sense for the Hawks to make a trade and clear space to pick up Evander Kane from waivers since we need scoring bad? Yeah, no. In another season, maybe, but the Blackhawks aren't doing PR nightmares this year. They've had more than their share of PR nightmares, and you will never see them make a signing like that for years now to come. It's going to be a long time before they have the political capital, so to speak, to make a signing like that. So no, that's not going to happen.
No.
Dan Nowak asks, or Novak, I don't know. This is Chicago. It's probably Novak. What's the biggest difference you have noticed since the coaching change? Attitude, body language, vibe. It's vibe. Vibe's the word, right? I mean, that's, you know, not to steal Sarah Sivian's chick, but you know, the vibe check right now is the Blackhawks are a much looser team than they were under Colleton. I mean, man, things were really bad those last couple of weeks under Colleton between the off-ice stuff with the Kyle Beach stuff and the Jenner and Block report combined with all the losing. That was the tensest team I've ever seen in my life. And Derek King just, you know, I don't know what kind of tactician he is just yet, but he came in and he just chilled everybody out, which is what they needed at that time. And I think that's a lot why they're playing better. That's a lot why they're more buying into a more defensive. They're just happier to be here now. They're having more fun at practices. It's a vibe. Derek King is a human vibe. And I think it's been a positive for the Blackhawks.
Yeah. And I know we have some questions about the tactician stuff too. And you know, he has made adjustments to the neutral zone and they've worked on some of the defensive zone stuff and some of the principles of what Colleton was coaching, you know, like the system is in a lot of ways it's still the same, and you can see defensively they definitely and it helps the goaltending's really improved. I mean, Fleury's been outstanding since King took over.
Yeah, I mean, look at Calgary. Is Calgary as good as they are, or are they just getting 965 goaltending all season long? Goaltending makes a big difference in this sport.
Yeah, for sure. And Lankinen's been better his last two starts too. So I feel like King and you know, obviously Mark Crawford needs some of this credit too, but they've been willing to adjust, you know, like they haven't been as married to some of what Colleton was doing and Colleton probably needed to adjust it too. But I think he also, you know, like he was making adjustments at the time, but I also felt like he believed so much in his own way, you know, and not that King and, you know, Crawford have changed or altered a whole lot, but they've looked at what's not working and how do we address it? You know, like they early on, King saw that other teams were getting through the neutral zone way too easy. And the way that they were setting up, like it shouldn't have been that easy. So like they've worked on that and, you know, and some of the, you know, way they're defending the slot and it's still not perfect. Like yesterday in the second period, San Jose got a lot of great chances and Fleury saved the day. And there's like, even in that St. Louis game, like there were some really bad turnovers where that game could have gone a different way. Like the Blackhawks aren't playing perfect. And King said that too. You know, he knows that this isn't, you know, like it's not a quick fix. And they're certainly, they're trying to figure out lines too. I thought the lines last night made a lot more sense. You know, the fourth line got buried, but the other lines, like Borgstrom's analytics and like they're driving possession. They need to figure out a way to score. And just as that whole team does, but I thought the lines were a little bit more balanced, and we'll see whenever Tyler Johnson gets back, because I think Kara, you know, further down your lineup makes even more sense. It makes you a better, you know, your bottom six better. But I thought the lines made a lot more sense last night. I know he's adjusting, he's trying different things, and I think that's the key. Like they played Gustafsson 6 minutes when he first started. Like it was like it's either, you know, our way or the highway. And you know, Gustafsson talked yesterday about how, you know, him and Crawford had some real serious talks about how he needs to play. And and people don't want to accept it, but he's been really good lately. Like his analytics are really good. Like he's not been on the ice. He still makes, you know, the dumb mistake occasionally, and usually it's because of pinching and not having someone protect him. Like last night he got called for hooking because he was trailing in the play because of that. But more often than not, like it's been better. So I think King's made adjustments, and we'll see as they go along here. It's only been 9 games. I think the one thing they learned from Colleton too is that you don't want to put too much on these guys' plate. Like the season's going on. Yeah. Like you've put in all the training camp, you've played all these games. Like to alter a system overnight is just it's asking for trouble.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, by you know, just the way that the Blackhawks and just about every team run things, the IceHogs play the same system as the Blackhawks for the most part. Like fundamentally, you know, philosophically, they play the same way. But in the AHL, it's much more of a dump and chase league because it's just less skilled. And that's kind of what Derek King has brought here. They're playing Jeremy Colliton's system, but much more conservatively. And I think that's why you're seeing success. They are dumping and chasing. He mentioned this, and I think we were in Calgary. He says, you know, you might have to dump the puck 50 times in a row before you get a chance. It's going to be boring. You have to be willing to be bored as a player. And I know fans don't want to hear that. Nobody wants their team to be the 1994 Devils, but they, you know, they won the Stanley Cup, so it's not so bad. It's more like a Minnesota Wild team from the late 2010s. That's not what you want to be, but that's kind of where they're at. And that's what they're doing. They're playing Jeremy Colliton's system with an AHL mindset of just get the puck deep, go get it, and see what happens. They're clogging up the neutral zone. They're slow. They're sagging back in the defensive zone. They're letting the defensemen guard the net, which is one thing that drove fans nuts was defensemen chasing the puck into the corners. And Jake McCabe talked about this a bunch. You know, he's sending centers now. The center gets back first, and they're the ones that go into the corner because defensemen are better at clearing out the net front than centers are. It seems like a fundamental, obvious thing, but that's not what they were doing under Jeremy Colliton, who, like you said, was a little too rigid and didn't want to adjust really in any way. So I don't think we're not going to see wholesale changes under Derek King. He's an interim coach. He's probably unlikely to be the long-term coach. That could change if he could prove himself over here. But right now he's a stopgap. And that means they're going to wait until they have a new coach and a full training camp to really fundamentally change the way they play hockey. So what you're seeing is Jeremy Colliton just with AHL, you know, style, which is, frankly, there's a lot of AHL-level talent on this team, so it makes sense.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The one thing I did notice, at least from the Sport Logic stats that I get the last few games, where the controlled entry success has been higher, where it, and maybe it's having more balance throughout, you know, the lineup where you have a little bit more offensive skill. Like those rates have been higher, where it was under 50%, you know, which is really low. And like last game, it was 57.6. And they had 87 controlled entries to San Jose's 56, you know, like that, like that's pretty substantial. So I wonder too, if your balance can outward Borgstrom's playing with Kubalik and, you know, if, even the Kane and DeBrincat having them on different lines, like, I think it allows you to enter the zone a little bit differently. And that's the one risk you take, you know, like, I guess the upside of breaking up Kane and DeBrincat, where they've been such your offensive driving force, is that you get more balance, and you know, like, they need to figure out if it balances in the scoring, but it allows them to maybe do entries and maybe not to dump and chase as much. And I was looking through the number. Like last night's was really interesting stat from last night was that we get the offensive possession time, and includes power play, so it usually can be a little. There can be a difference depending on how many power plays there are. But the Blackhawks didn't have a lot of power plays last night, but they still had their offensive zone possession time last night was 8 minutes and 14 seconds compared to San Jose's 4 minutes and 4 seconds. Like, it was such a lopsided game in so many ways. And, there are a lot of things that, like, the Blackhawks, they just need to figure out ways to convert that into scoring. So, I think there are some positives from last night to take, or, I mean, maybe they can get some more production based on that. But what else we got?
Let's go to Brady. What is your favorite Canadian city to visit for a Blackhawks game? I'm going to my first game of the year in Montreal next week, and I can't wait. I can't wait either. I love Montreal. You know, it's funny. Like when my first couple of years in the beat, I would judge every city based on like what to do tourism wise. Now it's just who's got the restaurants and the bars I like. And I haven't been to Montreal in a few years. You've taken that game the last couple of years. We were supposed to have the draft there last year. That obviously got made virtual, which is a huge bummer. Looking forward to this year. We can get the whole gang together. I love Montreal. Everyone loves Montreal. It's kind of cliche. I love Toronto. It's like basically just the Canadian Chicago. So it's a big city feel right on the lake. I love going to Winnipeg. I know nobody, like, we can never get to Winnipeg because of COVID. There's like no way to get to Winnipeg anymore. You just, like, there's no airplanes that go to Winnipeg anymore. Apparently that whole thing about them not having an airport, maybe that's true now. It's like a whole thing, but I love going to games in Winnipeg. That's one of my favorite atmospheres. Vancouver's fantastic. We never get any time in there. This last trip had about 17 hours in Vancouver.
It all depends on what time of year too. It's like,
I just assume it's going to be cold. I don't care.
It's fine. Know, but it's just like being in like Montreal, like in climbing hills and stuff when it's all snow, like I've had some Montreal moments where they're just like, well, you know, like you're just like going through, like, I remember the hotel was just like the, I don't know if they didn't shovel the street over, but just walking down, you know, like 3 feet high, and just, you know, like it all depends on how what the snow factor is. And
It snowed in Edmonton last week. It's funny. I see my Facebook memories, and this entire month I was in Western Canada every year because it's always the circus trip. And even the last few years, it's just last week I was in Western Canada. Just if it's mid-November, I'm in Western Canada, and there was already snow on the ground in Edmonton. And you know, I never minded. Like I feel like that's, I'm in Canada. It should be snowing. And
so, what's your favorite U.S. city?
Oh God. Well, I love going to New York. I'm a native New Yorker. I'm going there this week. I'm excited for that. But besides the obvious, I probably Los Angeles. I just love being in Southern California. I love staying in Manhattan Beach. I love renting a bike and going up and down the Strand. I love the vibe in LA. I'll never be able to afford to live there, so I love visiting there. But honestly, there are very few cities that I don't like going to. I like going everywhere. I like going to Newark. I like going to Winnipeg. All the ones that people have on their no trade clauses, I'm still excited to go to all of them. There's something to do everywhere.
Yeah, I had never been to LA in my life before joining this beat, and then, like that was such a big deal to me. Like I will never forget that first trip to LA. Like I went to the museums and just, you know, having the window down in whatever winter month it was. It was just
I'll tell you, being back on the road. Like 9 nights away from home. That's a long time to be away from home. And I've got 5 nights coming this week, and then 4 nights next week. I missed it.
Thank you, by the way.
No, hey, I'm happy. I've always told you my dream is to do this job just on the road and have someone else take all the home games. That's the vibe we've got this month. It's great. But I just missed being on the road. And that's no knock on my family. I love my family. Don't get me wrong. But like, it's just nice. I like being in hotels. I like being on planes. You know, being in the airport never bothers me. I like just eating out every meal. I like just walking around cities. I don't care what the weather is. Going to Seattle was awesome. I got to be a tourist for the first time in forever. You know, 2 years of being stuck at home and my whole life was travel for, you know, 8 years, whatever it was. I just missed all of it, like every aspect of it. Like I had there was no point of that trip where it's like, God damn it, why am I here? Like it's just sometimes how you get. And it's just so great to be on the road again. It's become such a big part of my life that I just miss it. And I just found out today I'm going to get back to United Platinum next year for the first time in 4 years. Awesome. They lowered the bar so low because of COVID, and I traveled so much this little bit here that I'm going to get there, and I'm very excited to no longer bear the burden of being a lowly gold member.
I know there's a question I saw about Kyle Davidson and how he's done, this is from James Schwartz, and how would you rate Kyle Davidson's performance? Will the top candidates all be gone by the time the Hawks get around replacing Stan Bowman?
Yeah, Jeff Gorton went to Montreal. That was one of the candidates on our list.
Everything that I've heard is that Kyle Davidson is being kept in the loop with a lot of, you know, like what a lot of that Danny Wirtz and Jamie Faulkner are doing. So like, I feel like he's, whether he's the president of the hockey ops or the GM, like I think he's going to have a large role regardless. Like you don't put someone in this position and keep them as much in loop as he's been, or allow him to make these type of decisions without foreseeing him having some large role in the organization. So I wrote about this last week. I do think that they need to make a decision before the end of the season. Like you need to fully give Davidson in or hire someone, the president of hockey ops, and I get some of it is challenging because it is in season, but to give someone an opportunity to just to have time with the kind of determine where the organization is going, or have time with Kyle Davidson to get to know him, or allow Davidson the power to make some, you know, like there are decisions ahead after this offseason, and you know, part of it's the Kane and Taves contracts, but there's a lot of decisions that will affect you for the next 5+ years. So,
well, it's so hard to evaluate a GM. Like, if you're coaching for your job, you see the impact right away. Like you can things have turned around. This coach is really connecting. GMs, like the moves they make, you might not bear fruit or the opposite for years to come. So how does someone GM for their job? I mean, this is basically an audition for Kyle Davidson. He fired the coach. Everyone kind of agreed that was the right decision.
Well, you know what? You don't want someone GM for the job.
Right. Because, this is what
like,
I'm that's, saying.
Like,
yeah.
You don't want someone making those decisions trying to prove themselves. Like you want
right. That's why we're in this mess to begin with, right? That's what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. So yeah, I think maybe it's getting through the negotiations with Kyle Beach that they can, and that like I know that. Like that's the priority, but I don't feel like that's taking up every minute of their day, you know. Like they sort of have to wait until the next meeting with the mediator, and you know, and Montreal's moving at a different pace with their hiring and firing, and I know a lot of it's the Blackhawks want to get the right person for many reasons, you know, like they want to get the right hockey person, but they also want to get the right person who aligns with their values and where they want the organization to be, and not the fall back into what happened, you know, with them. So I know there's a lot more that's going into it than maybe other places, but it does feel like at some point before the end of the season, the Blackhawks probably need to have some of that squared away just so that they can move forward hockey wise and kind of figure out where, you know, it's going to be a difficult path for who it is, whoever it's going to be, but it probably needs to be determined sooner than later.
All right, let's wrap up with a quick prospect corner. I don't know if it's Andrew Nolan or Nolan Andrew, but he asks, which prospects do you see going to the World Juniors next month? Will Reichel go if healthy?
Yeah, I think Reichel goes if he's healthy. Drew Comeso and Slaggart, Landon Slaggart will go for the U.S.
Colton Dock,
yeah, no, I think Colton Dock for Canada.
There'll be a handful of guys worth watching. Reichel could be going to the Olympics too, right?
Yeah, no, I think Reichel Olympics, but yeah, they'll have a lot of. I was trying to think who else is still under 20. Nolan Allen should play for Canada. They'll have a handful of guys, and maybe I'll try to do something a little bit closer to this, see who's in that mix. Because last year, Vlasic was supposed to go, and then he ended up with COVID, and Comeso was supposed to go, and Reichel had COVID last year, too, so they didn't have as many guys there last season that they expected. But they should have a handful for some of those top teams.
All right. Special shout out to all our new subscribers who hopped on our Black Friday deal this week. There's a lot of you, and we are happy to have you join the club. I hope you're pleasant in the comment section because not everybody is these days. We got a couple more practice here in Chicago. Then I'll be heading to DC and New York. I'm always looking forward to this trip. I proposed to my wife on the banks of the Tidal Basin outside the FDR Memorial. How bleeding heart, pinko, commie, liberal am I? So I always walk the whole trail of the mine. It's like 4 or 5 mile walk throughout all the monuments. I love DC. I'll have coverage for you all week, and then we've got lots.
I proposed
of stuff
in there. Central Park, so we both have.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, I have a couple stories coming in the next few days, and we've obviously had a lot of stuff in over the last week, and the roster projection story today. I think it's always a fun piece to kind of like. It was a little bit harder because there are some questions, but it kind of shows you where they are cap wise and some of the prospects coming and. It'll be we'll have plenty of other stuff and then we'll be back at I guess a week from today potentially for another podcast, and yeah, just keep on rolling.
Rock on.
All right, for Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Lazarus and Powers Talking. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?